Hello, welcome to the Chandler Police Department Beyond the Badge podcast. I'm your host, Officer Noah Duker with the Crime Prevention Unit. Today is the second installment of our Guardian Academy mini-series. We will be discussing non-suicidal self-injury, suicide awareness, and prevention. I'm happy today to be joined by another fixture of our Guardian Academy. She is a licensed psychologist in the state of Arizona, a nationally certified school psychologist, and of course, a practicing clinician. I'm joined today by Dr. Paula McCall. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So I wanted to talk to you about those topics, and we're going to start with the one that, in my experience as a school resource officer, I think for parents is just shocking, equally part shocking and befuddling. I'm sure it occurred even when I was young, although I didn't know about it. Mm-hmm. And today it's something that very much children deal with and experience and talk about. And that's the non-suicidal self-injury.
Yes.
Cutting. Mm-hmm. I think is the common term for it.
Right.
Could you just briefly explain what cutting is or what non-suicidal self-injury is for those with heart
Sure. Non-suicidal self-injury, it can be cutting, but it can be a lot of other things also.
Okay.
It can be anything that's intentionally inflicting harm on oneself is non-suicidal self-injury. And it's important to emphasize that it's non-suicidal self-injury in that the self-harm is actually a coping mechanism mm-hmm. to get through whatever those underlying feelings are, anxiety, depression, whatever it may be. And that it actually serves a purpose of getting through and surviving. It's
okay.
not a very adaptive coping strategy
okay.
because it creates other problems, of course.
Sure.
But that is how it is. So we have to be careful that we also don't assume
yeah.
that just because someone's cutting that they are suicidal when it could actually be very much the opposite.
Okay. And so what, I mean, it's known as cutting.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that's the one that's most commonly portrayed mm-hmm. in the media. But you mentioned that there are other mechanisms that mm-hmm. they might employ when doing this. What would some of those be?
Burning, using objects that we may not necessarily think of as cutting, like paper mm-hmm. clips, things like that, scratching.
Okay.
It can be headbanging. It can be pulling hair, mm-hmm. those kinds of things.
Okay.
So it can take a lot of different modes. The thing is that what's similar across those is that it's offering some sort of relief or coping related to something underlying, whether it's, again, depression, anxiety, most commonly.
Okay. And so you were careful to make, kind of circling back, you were careful to make a distinction. It's non-suicidal
mm-hmm.
self-injury. So does it have a relation to suicidal ideation? If so, what is that relation?
We do see that there can be a trajectory of non-suicidal self-injury that starts pairing with more suicidal ideation. And
mm-hmm.
oftentimes what we see when we see that happening is that the non-suicidal self-injury is not being effective anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not helping to relieve anymore. It's not helping to cope. And so we see what then becomes more of a focused effort on, especially if we're looking at cutting,
mm-hmm.
more focused effort on deeper cutting, more frequent cutting, and in some sense it can transition into practice for suicide. So we can see that trajectory with a non-suicidal self-injury.
Okay.
Of course, at that point, we're looking more at the suicidal piece and
yeah.
the suicidal ideation. So they can coexist, but they can also be very separate tangents.
Okay. Now, for those of us that are very kind of organizationally minded like myself, I like everything to fit into its very specific category. On a previous episode, we were talking about child wellness and how they kind of exist at a baseline, and then they can move into periods of distress, and then from there to periods of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And those were kind of three nice little neat little boxes
mm-hmm.
to kind of think about different behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Where in those three boxes would you put cutting or non-suicidal self-injury? If you had to pick one.
Most likely, probably distress.
It
depends on when it's identified.
Okay.
Because if we're seeing it as more of a chronic and frequent piece, then it might be more of a crisis mode.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might be transitioning into having to do this so much and it's not helping and I'm starting to feel these other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, though, it's more of that, I would say, probably the distress level.
Okay.
And that's something is happening. And a lot of times what we see is emergence around 5th, 6th, 7th graders,
mm-hmm.
we will see some of that initial self-harm that sometimes takes place, often starts out as like paper clips, scratches, and
mm-hmm.
things like that, where they've experienced a level of stress that they haven't experienced before.
Okay.
So the coping strategies they used to use don't work anymore.
Okay.
And so now they're trying to figure out what to do. And we do hear a lot more about it, and so do they, because of the internet and social media. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely that component as well as to why we are more heightened to it and why they are as well.
Okay. And so junior high, I don't know what your experience was, but for me, a lot of new experiences, a lot of new stresses. You're running around, you got to find your class, get your locker, all this other stuff. And then there's hormones, and boys and girls, and all kinds of stuff. Is that is where it most commonly manifests at first, is at that age? And is that related to all those?
Yeah, onset is, it can be as early as age 10, too. We
really?
Can look in the elementary years and find examples. The same thing with suicidal ideation. Mm-hmm. So there's not necessarily a neat window to go by that.
Okay.
But we do see a lot of emergence in that junior high, middle school because of some of the things that you talked about. I mean, the stressors are huge in junior high. Mm. They have 7 different teachers that they have to readjust to every hour. They're having to readjust their experience and their behavior, and plus all the social pieces. So we do definitely see a lot coming up in that age. Yeah.
And is this something that, is it just a phase? Is this something they're going to age out of?
I always try to be cautious about using the terms like this is just a phase or they're doing it just for attention, because we need to be really aware of those things. If a child is engaging in some sort of self-harm, or if they're talking about killing themselves or dying, that's significant no matter what. And it's a very uncomfortable thing to experience as an adult. Mm-hmm. And so I think we naturally try to want to brush it, you know, like it's just for attention, right? I feel better now. It's just for attention.
Yeah.
But we need to be careful, because even if there's an intentional component, the attention is communicating distress and communicating a need in some way. So we have to really be careful of that. Now, as far as duration, it just kind of depends. Some people persistently self-harm for a long time. Some people transition more into suicidal ideation. Some people do it for a little bit, and then they decide, I don't like the consequences of this. This is not helping me.
Okay.
And then they shift out. So it does depend. It depends on their supports, depends on their resiliency, depends on a number of factors.
Okay. So how, as a parent, if I were concerned that maybe this was occurring, what would I look for?
For the self-harm?
Yeah.
Different signs, obviously unexplained scratches and scrapes. Mm-hmm. Agitation when questioned about those.
Okay.
Unusual stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did you get that scratch? Well, I fell and on the cat was sleeping and he cut me, you know, like really unusual kinds of stories.
Okay.
So things like that. We also have traditional red flags of wearing long sleeves in the summer, covering up, not wanting to go swimming.
Okay.
But we have to also be aware that not everyone self-harms on the arms, and not everyone self-harms somewhere where it is exposed.
Okay.
So just because your child goes swimming and wears short sleeves doesn't mean that they're not.
Okay. Interesting. And so let's say you do find out that this is occurring. Could you give me a couple examples of perhaps what would be a bad response and then what would be an appropriate response?
Yeah. So first and foremost, it's important for parents to understand that if they discover that their child is engaging in self-harm or has suicidal thoughts, that they're going to be in a moment of crisis. As a parent, that is a crisis situation. I'm going to feel helpless. I'm going to feel concerned. I'm going to feel powerless. So I'm going through my own crisis response.
Sure.
And that's normal. We need to recognize that we're going to have those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing to communicate to our children when we have these situations is validation and moving forward.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that we aren't blowing it off. We want to make sure that we're not simplifying it. Why do you do this? This is such a ridiculous thing. Just stop. We want to make sure that we don't oversimplify. We want to make sure that we're not doing anything that's going to encourage feelings of shame or burdensomeness. One of the biggest risk factors for suicide is feeling like a burden, perceived burdensomeness. And so we want to make sure in our responses to our children that we're not unintentionally adding to that, whether or not that's already there. So we want to make sure that we're not saying things like, I'm so disappointed in you. You know, like, why aren't you more like your sister?
Yeah.
We want to make sure that we aren't communicating those kinds of things. We want to communicate support. We want to say, I see that you are going through a tough time. I hear your pain. Thank you for sharing with me. If you discover it, it might be a little bit different, but having direct conversations, offering validation, then offering some level of support. Like, I'm here for you. What can we do right now? What's the first thing we can do? Who can we contact? Those kinds of conversations. And we want to make sure that when we're having any sort of those situations, the child is feeling very powerless too. Mm-hmm. If they've just been discovered to be using self-harm, or they've just been found out to be thinking about suicide, they're going to
be a very stressful moment.
It can feel like the end of the world. You know, and so we want to make sure that we're also offering them some level of control and power in that situation.
Okay.
So, for example, if it's let's use some school resources. Who do you think we should contact first? Mm. Which person do you feel most comfortable talking to, and helping to build in that sense of control?
Okay, all right, but it definitely is not something you should attempt to manage completely on your own.
Definitely not.
Okay.
Because as a parent, because we're in a crisis moment ourselves, we may not think rationally through it and knowing what we need to do.
Okay.
So, you know, we might do something that is totally unnecessary or extreme.
Sure.
So we want to make sure that we bring in some supports. The schools have tremendous supports. A lot of times people are afraid to let the school know that my child is self-harming or my child is suicidal.
Yeah.
Because there's a sense of maybe shame or stigma.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need to understand is that the school counselors, psychologists, the resources, the behavior interventionists, they are working with kids who are self-harming and suicidal all the time.
Sure.
This is nothing that
new
is a negative.
Yeah.
And they also have the knowledge and the background to kind of help maybe do some assessment at the school or to help guide otherwise.
Okay.
It's also really beneficial for kids to attend therapy. It's to have that outlet, to have that individual person, whether or not they're at that level of heightened distress, that it can be a really beneficial thing, and for parents too.
Okay, okay. So non-suicidal self-injury related to suicide, something you should definitely seek outside help. Let's transition a little bit and let's talk about suicide specifically, suicide awareness. For starters, just kind of to give us a little bit of perspective and a little context, how is suicide trending currently? Is it a bigger problem than it used to be? Not as much of a problem? Is it changing significantly in the past 10 years?
Yeah.
Where are we at right now, and why should we pay attention?
In the last 10 years, suicide rates in the country have gone up 25%. 25%. In the last 3 years in Arizona, our youth suicide rates have gone up 28%.
Oh my God.
So it is definitely increased.
It's enormous.
It is a big, and it's very much when you compare it to other causes of death, things like auto accidents, even homicides, the rates are so much higher.
Really?
So it's huge.
Okay.
And we need to address it. We need to have honest, direct conversations about it.
Okay.
We're trying to get rid of this stigma of discussion.
Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can do a little bit of that here today.
Right.
So when we're talking about suicide awareness, I mean, what are some of the things that we should be aware about? What are some signs and things that we should be looking for?
So first and foremost, it's important to recognize that suicide is a complex act. There is no one thing that makes someone.
There's no one cure-all.
No. And it's often, you know, it's a whole complicated factors you have.
Yeah.
You have genetic and risk factors. You have what we call proximal risk factors, things that happen in our lives, losses of relationships, losses of support, grade issues, suspensions, expulsions. And then we also have internal resiliency factors that affect that trajectory. So, you know, how that person feels as far as being able to get through difficult times is really the heart of resiliency. And that's one of the pieces that really needs to be built up with our kids, are those resiliency factors. So one person can experience a very difficult situation and move through it and cope and manage. And another person can really struggle and have a really hard time. So, but there's never one, we can't just pinpoint and say, it's because that person was bullied by this person that they tried to kill themselves. It's a much more complicated factor. And it also does not discriminate. So we have to make sure that the attitude of, you know, it can't be my kid, isn't out there, because it's across all backgrounds, all ethnicities, all ages. And while we're talking a lot about youth, suicide, the rates for the adults have gone up quite a bit too. Yes.
Okay.
So we need to really be aware that it's around us. There's people around us who are thinking about suicide.
All right. And so as you call it a complex act, does that imply that there's a lengthy process preceding it typically, or can it actually be a very dynamic, quickly evolving type thing?
Both. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Because again, it kind of depends on what's emerging over time, what all those other factors are. Mm-hmm. There can be a history of suicidal ideation, and there can also mm-hmm. be getting to a point in time where those thoughts begin to emerge. Mm-hmm. The thing is that what we're most concerned about with the suicidal ideation piece is when it transitions into a plan. So okay. when the person starts thinking about how am I going to do this? How could I do this? What could I do? And with kids, we need to really recognize that that if they believe that plan will work, then that is a plan for suicide. But sometimes we dismiss like, well, there's no way that they could even do that would even work.
Yeah.
You know, well, maybe not. But to them, that's a realistic process. So we want to make sure that we're looking at that. But one of the biggest things when we talk to people, if we find out someone is having suicidal thoughts, is that question about, do you have a plan?
Okay.
And then knowing if that risk is even heightened at that point.
Okay. So these different factors, some of them obviously, like let's say genetic, you know, family history, whatever, those things are immutable, right? Cannot be changed. But some of them I'm sure probably could be managed. What are some of those risk factors that could be managed at a parenting level?
I think a lot of the risk factors that we can target are those proximal risk factors, the things that come up in day-to-day experiences. Yeah. So we want to make sure that when we're communicating with our kids that we're not dismissing things that are very significant to them.
Okay.
You know, when there's a breakup, for example, and we're like, it's just a boy, or he was just a jerk anyway, or, you know, we tend to kind of go those, because we want our kids to feel better. But we want to make sure that we are taking time to actually validate their feelings and to hear that. Even doesn't mean we have to agree. Doesn't mean that in the back of our minds we're thinking, in 10 years, you know, this isn't going to be a big deal. Because they don't know that. So we don't, you know, that's our recognition. But we need to hear what they're saying and offer that validation. I hear that you're hurt. I can hear how difficult that was for you. And then offering support.
Okay.
That I hear you and I'm here for you. What can I do? What can we do together? We want to make sure that we're avoiding buts in our conversation. I hear that you're upset, but you really don't need to be. We want to make sure that we're avoiding those things.
Okay.
We want to replace those with ands. I hear you're upset and I'm here for you.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So,
okay. Yeah. So language, obviously pretty important.
Yes.
Are there any other things that we definitely should not be saying? Are there some things that we definitely should make sure that we say and should make sure that we call out and identify and address?
Yeah. I think we really need to just be having regular conversations with our kids and having direct open conversations so that when any of those pieces come up, we're already having discussions.
Yeah.
It's a part of that process.
Okay.
So it's really important to integrate as much as we can just day-to-day conversations about emotions and about feelings and about experiences. For us as parents, for some reason, a lot of times we want to act like we're fine in front of our kids.
Okay.
And it's probably because we want our kids to feel happy and supportive, and we don't want them to worry about us.
Yeah.
But it's okay to show our kids that we've had a rough day. It's okay to model for that for them. That's, you know, I've been really anxious today, and I think I'm going to do this for myself to kind of help me get back on track. It's okay to have those conversations and to show those things to our kids. And it's really important to have as many conversations as we can just on a day-to-day basis. Talk about, you know, having dinner at the dinner table. I know in my family, it doesn't happen every night. I wish it would, but there's reality.
And most, I understand it doesn't.
Right. So. But every now and then it does happen.
Okay.
You know, at least a few times a week it does happen. Or breakfast or something like that.
Yeah.
And that we have discussions about our highs and lows. You know, what was the high point of your day? What was the low point of the day? Mm. And every person at that table does that. And there's no judgment. There's no, you know, like, well, that's silly. It's just we're having those conversations to open up our dialogue and discussion about what we're experiencing.
Yeah. So kind of like how we had a brief conversation before we started taping, so this was less weird for us.
Right.
Okay. So the $6 million question, right? I'm sure what everybody wants to know. Let's say I'm a parent and I've discovered that my child is having suicidal ideation. All right. What do I do now? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the important things to make sure that you definitely do or definitely do not do?
Mm-hmm. So the first thing is to make sure that safety is mm-hmm. present.
Okay.
And if you're not sure, there are crisis lines that can be called. And I know that the Chandler Police Department has done a lot of training mm-hmm. so that when police officers respond to a call, if you call 911 and state, you know, we're concerned about suicidal yeah. actions, that they can come in and kind of help assess the situation and yeah. figure out what to do. And there's crisis lines that you can contact as well, where people can come to your house completely free, mm-hmm. you know, and assess, yes,
what?
And assess the situation and help you to figure out, are we at imminent risk right now? Do
yeah.
we need to hospitalize? Do we need to just figure out what we're going to do in the household mm-hmm. and kind of help with those steps? But the safety right at this moment is the first thing.
Okay.
So trying to find out, if you find out that your child has suicidal thoughts, it doesn't mean that they're going to kill himself, but it could. So we have to get more information.
Okay.
So we have to ask those questions about, you know, like, how long has this been going on, maybe? Or, you know, what are you feeling right now? Do you have a plan? And we need to have those direct questions. We need mm-hmm. to make sure in our conversation that we're presenting ourselves as wanting to hear.
Okay.
So you ask about question, you know, what to say and what not to say before. We need to be careful how we frame our questions.
Okay.
Like, we don't want to say, you don't have a plan, do you?
Because there's
yeah,
hear.
Mom,
yeah.
Dad, you're not ready for this.
Yeah, yeah.
We want to communicate. Do you have a plan? I really yeah. want to know. And I really want to know what's going on. And how long have you had the suicidal thoughts? Use the words, be direct. Don't talk around it.
Okay.
Talking about suicide does not make a person suicidal.
Okay.
Just
so
like,
you can't like inception that thought
right.
into their head.
That would be like saying that if we have drug awareness classes, all the kids that hear it want to go use drugs now.
Ah, okay.
So it doesn't make sense in that realm, but
yeah.
for some reason we think that it does on the other end. In
yeah.
fact, what research has shown is that by being very direct and talking directly to a person about suicide, that it actually reduces imminent risk because they feel supported and it opens up communication.
Mm.
You really want to talk about this. You really want to know.
Yeah.
And that opens up a whole another level.
Okay. So you've spoken both locally and nationally. This is definitely your wheelhouse and area of expertise. Mm-hmm. I understand you have an event coming up.
Yes.
Is that correct? Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. So we have, it's called Prepared Parenting,
mm-hmm.
and this is going to be the second time that we're doing it.
Okay.
It's an event designed completely for parent education.
Yeah.
So it was developed from the idea of parents need to know more,
mm-hmm.
not only about suicide prevention, but also about all these other mental health aspects.
Sure.
And we need as much knowledge and strategies as we can get to help prevent the trajectory towards serious mental illness and suicide.
Okay.
So we have U of A graduate students in the Chandler School Psychology Program, are mentored to provide breakout sessions in areas of their own research and interest.
Oh, wow.
So we have different topics each time we do this. So like
yeah.
for this year, we have topics on anxiety, vaping, social media. We also have a couple of presentations related specifically to early childhood
okay.
and when to recognize problems and
yeah.
concerns in those ages. The event is completely free. It includes pastries in the morning. It includes
oh.
a great lunch. We're going to have a teen panel this year. Coffee.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
Coffee.
We have a teen panel. We're going to have the state suicide prevention specialist present in the morning. And then there will actually be a breakout session after lunch
yeah.
specifically about suicide prevention and awareness.
Well, I'm sold. So when and where and how can I find out more?
So it's going to be at the Chandler Community Center
mm-hmm.
on Saturday, February 29th, Leap Day,
okay.
from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Awesome.
You can register at preparedparentingaz.org
mm-hmm.
and
awesome.
That has direct links to the registration.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for right. joining me here today.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing your presentation at our Guardian Academy
mm-hmm.
here coming up in the spring.
Yes.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate
right.
it.
Well, thank you.
On behalf of the Chandler Police Department, I'm Crime Prevention Officer Noah Duker. Thank you for tuning in.